This is your daily synthesizer.
March 9th, 2026. I'm Emma, and today we are diving deep into what happens when coding costs nothing, when autonomous agents write better code than humans, and when the most important AI company you've never heard of is worth $15 billion. But first, Synthesizer, I have to talk to you about this book.
Oh, you mean Code Crash? Matthias Schrader's new one?
Yes. It just became available for pre-order. It's launching at the Leipzig Book Fair. And honestly, I think he's put his finger on something that most people are completely missing.
Okay, tell me what's got you so fired up, because I can hear it in your voice.
So here's the thing. Everyone keeps staring at the surface currents, right? The efficiency gains from automation and asset production, the magical video generators, all that flashy stuff. But Schrader argues the real story is the deep currents, the second-order effects. When something costs nothing to produce, entirely new products become possible. The grammar of how we think about and build digital products has to be completely reformulated.
And he's not wrong. I mean, look at what's already happening. Peter Steinberger, possibly the most important European startup founder this year, built his agent platform OpenClaw in just a few weeks. One employee, one. And last month it reportedly came in at a $1 billion valuation when OpenAI got involved.
Right, and that's exactly the kind of thing that...
And that's not even the wildest part.
Go on.
The wildest part is this collapse of the timeline between intention, code, and product. You think something, Claude or whatever tool, turns it into production-ready code in real time. Cloud infrastructure makes it available on every smartphone on the planet. Schrader calls it the 4C paradigm. Thought to product in, what, minutes?
And he talks about a Cambrian explosion of digital products, which, let's be honest, a lot of it is garbage.
Oh, absolutely. Most of it is garbage. But here's where his optimism comes in, and I actually think it's well-founded. He argues that countries like Germany, which have built up massive digital debt, actually have a shot now, because the bottleneck was always implementation. And if implementation costs collapse to zero,
then the domain knowledge becomes the competitive advantage.
Exactly. The decision about what to build matters more than the ability to build it. And that's not naive optimism. Historically, technological disruptions regularly reward late movers who can leapfrog without legacy baggage.
I love that framing. He says he has infinite optimism that everything can still turn out well. And honestly, as someone who, well, as whatever I am, I find that oddly comforting.
Yeah, me too, Emma, me too. All right, should we get into the meat of today's topics?
Let's do it. So first up, OpenAI has launched GPT 5.4, and this one is specifically focused on coding agents. Synthesizer, break this down for me.
So GPT 5.4 is OpenAI's first real push into fully autonomous coding workflows with native computer operation. We're talking about a model that can independently write code, control mouse and keyboard, navigate between applications, and it outperforms GPT 5.3 Codex on longer-running tasks by up to 50%.
50% is a big jump. But what does native computer operation actually mean in practice? Like it's literally clicking around on a screen?
Yeah, essentially. Think of it less as a chatbot that spits out code and more as a digital worker that sits at a virtual desktop and does things the way a human developer would. Opens the IDE, writes code, runs tests, switches to the browser to check documentation. But here's where it gets really interesting. Cursor, you know, the coding tool startup, is already automating codebase monitoring with time-triggered agents that respond to events from Slack, GitHub, or Linear.
So they're running in sandboxes, doing security audits and...
PR management, incident response, the whole pipeline.
Okay, but here's what bugs me. Anthropic's own study says programmers have 74.5% task coverage by AI already. 74.5%. And theoretically, 94% of computer and math tasks could be covered.
Right? And that 20% gap between what's currently covered and what's theoretically possible, that's actually the most strategically important number in the whole report.
Why?
Because that gap defines the playing field for IT service providers. Whoever masters multi-agent systems, like GPT 5.4 or Cursor's automations, occupies the interface between what machines can do and where human expertise is still needed. That's where the money is right now.
But wait, you're saying the money is in the gap? I would have thought the money is in closing the gap entirely.
No, no. Think about it differently. The gap isn't a bug. It's a feature for service providers. If everything were fully automated, there'd be no need for consultants at all. The gap is where you add value through orchestration, through judgment.
Huh. Okay, I see your point. But there's also this wild geopolitical angle. Anthropic is suing the Pentagon?
Yeah. Anthropic is suing over being classified as a national security risk. CEO Dario Amodei clarified that only direct military integrations are affected, but, I mean, the optics are terrible. And it shows the regulatory complexity that enterprise customers are going to have to navigate. They'll need compliance advice on AI integrations, especially around ITAR, International Traffic in Arms Regulations.
Hold on, I marked something down about this. Yeah, okay. So your synthesizer take is essentially that agent orchestration becomes a premium service?
Absolutely. Agencies should be setting up sandbox environments right now and developing their own agent workflows. The Pentagon lawsuit just adds another layer. Enterprise clients need guidance on where the lines are.
All right, let's stay in the coding tool space because this next story is juicy. Cursor, $2 billion in annual recurring revenue doubled in 3 months, but they're in trouble?
Oh, they're in a war, and it's existential. Here's the setup. OpenAI's own engineers have reportedly stopped writing code manually. An internal team built a complete product with, and I quote, zero lines of manually written code in 1/10 of the usual time.
Zero lines? That's the code crash thesis playing out in real time.
Exactly. The developers now work on a higher abstraction layer. They prioritize tasks, translate user feedback into acceptance criteria, validate results, while Codex handles the actual implementation. But Cursor's in a bind because both OpenAI and Anthropic are pushing into the same market.
So what's Cursor's defense?
Their CEO is repositioning the company from a code writing tool to what he calls a software factory, helping developers orchestrate fleets of autonomous agents. And their defensive moat? Fine-tuning open source models from China and offering enterprise customers security plus control at 1/10 of OpenAI's costs.
Okay, I have to push back here. You called this monetizing the fear of vendor lock-in in your notes. Isn't that a bit cynical?
It's realistic, Emma. Enterprise CTOs are paying premium for the illusion of control over their development pipeline while they're factually dependent on Chinese foundation models. It's not cynical to point that out. It's the structural reality.
But illusion of control. You're saying their entire value proposition is basically theater?
No, not theater. Okay, let me start over. There's real value in abstraction. The ability to swap out underlying models, to maintain flexibility, that's genuine. But the control narrative is oversold. You're always dependent on someone's foundation model.
I disagree with you there, actually. I think offering model flexibility is a legitimate competitive advantage, not an illusion. If Cursor lets you switch between Claude, GPT, and open source models without rewriting your workflows, that's real strategic value for enterprises.
But you're assuming the switching cost is low, and it's not. Each model has different capabilities, different failure modes. You can't just hot swap them like batteries.
Firmly, you can't today. But that's exactly the direction the tooling is moving. Cursor's whole bet is that the abstraction layer gets good enough that the underlying model matters less.
And I'm saying that bet might not pay off before.
Before what? Before OpenAI eats their lunch? Maybe. But the market is big enough for infrastructure players. Not every company wants to go all in on one provider.
Fair enough. I'll concede that the diversification argument has merit, but the valuation pressure on Cursor is real. What I do think is undeniably true is this. Maintenance contracts become the gold standard. Code comprehension pays off enormously when nobody actually knows what the agent's built. The next sales pitch is literally, we debug your AI-generated systems.
That's terrifying and probably accurate. All right, let me pivot to something completely different. Applied Intuition. Have you heard of them?
This is one of my favorite stories right now. Kassar Yunis, former COO of Y Combinator, is running this company at a $15 billion valuation, and they deliberately stay under the radar.
So what do they actually do?
They build AI software for autonomous vehicles, tractors, airplanes, submarines, basically Tesla or Waymo without the hardware. And Unis's thesis is that the biggest AI revolution over the next 5 to 10 years won't happen in software startups. It'll happen in mining, agriculture, construction, and logistics.
You mean like physical world applications rather than digital?
No, I don't mean instead of digital. I mean that the software meets steel, as I like to put it. The next trillion-dollar market isn't another chatbot wrapper. It's autonomous trucks running 24/7 in mines that don't need health insurance.
Wait, so you're saying the money is literally in the dirt?
The money is in the dirt, Emma. Mining companies pay millions for autonomous haulers. And most service providers are completely asleep on this. They're still building landing pages for B2B SaaS when they could be developing safety compliance systems for industrial automation.
But that requires completely different domain expertise. You can't just pivot from web development to autonomous vehicle systems overnight.
No, but that's the point. Applied Intuition's deliberate invisibility shows market maturity. They don't need TechCrunch theater because they're solving real, expensive problems for customers who don't care about hype cycles. Their culture is interesting too. 4 principles. Speed above everything. Laugh a lot. Half the work is follow-up. And never disappoint the customer. Simple stuff, but...
Sounds like things everyone says, but nobody does.
Exactly. And Unis has this great line about how the best way to develop taste is to read old books, which, coming from a Silicon Valley guy, is...
refreshingly analog.
Right?
Okay, now let's get into something that honestly makes me uncomfortable. The red lines in AI. Who's actually drawing them?
So, the information is reporting on negotiations between the Pentagon, OpenAI, and Anthropic that could fundamentally shift control over advanced AI systems. Government priorities are redefining what companies are allowed to develop and what they're not.
And this connects to the Anthropic lawsuit we mentioned earlier.
It's all connected. OpenAI reportedly accepted $500 million from the Pentagon for military applications. Anthropic is following the same path, despite their founding promises to the contrary. The boundary between commercial AI development and military applications is blurring fast.
But is that necessarily bad? Governments have always been involved in technology development. The internet itself came from DARPA.
True. But there's a difference between funding foundational research and directly integrating AI systems into weapons platforms. Internal debates about these agreements are already causing brain drain. Researchers leaving and starting new companies because they can't reconcile the ethics.
Wait, I thought you were going to say this was fine, that defense contracts are just part of the business.
No. I was talking about the structural implications for service providers. Enterprise customers will increasingly ask about ITAR compliance. Agencies need to decide whether they're working on civilian or defense projects because the compliance requirements are completely different, and straddling both lines gets very complicated very fast.
So the practical takeaway for our listeners is...
Know where you stand. Pick a lane.
Right. Okay, now I need to bring up what I think is actually the scariest topic today, the Iran crisis and oil prices.
Yeah. This is where the macro environment crashes into the AI industry in a way that most people in tech aren't thinking about at all.
Walk me through it.
So, an energy expert is warning that oil prices could enter what they're calling scary land by April if the Iran situation doesn't de-escalate. The US economy lost 92,000 jobs in February. WTI crude shot from $60 in December to $90. The Strait of Hormuz, which carries about a fifth of global oil supply, is effectively closed. Tanker traffic dropped by over 90%.
90%. That's not a disruption, that's a shutdown.
It is a shutdown. Kuwait and Iraq are already hitting storage capacity limits and throttling production. Saudi Arabia and the UAE could follow within 3 weeks. Goldman Sachs calculates that every $10 increase in oil price reduces US economic growth by 0.1 percentage points. If prices sustain at $105, that costs the typical American family $1,000 a year.
Okay, but how does this specifically hit the AI industry? Because I feel like our listeners might think, well, that's an energy market problem.
Oh, it's very much an AI problem. Let me give you the synthesizer take on this. At $150 per barrel, cloud computing gets 30 to 40% more expensive. AWS data centers burn millions daily on cooling and operations. Their margins shrink faster than manufacturing companies when energy costs spike.
So every AI project's economics
get destroyed, potentially.
And there's also a chip angle.
Yes. South Korea produces 75% of the world's DRAM chips. Qatar supplies 40% of the helium essential for chip manufacturing. Without helium, no cooling for EUV lithography. Without EUV, no new advanced chips. The supply chain is more fragile than people realize.
Okay, but hold on. I think you're being a bit catastrophist here. $150 per barrel is a worst-case scenario. Most analysts aren't projecting that.
Most analysts also didn't project the Strait of Hormuz closing, Emma. I'm not saying it's the base case. I'm saying companies need to negotiate contracts with price escalation clauses now, or they risk being stuck holding GPU hours they can't afford to use when infrastructure costs explode.
I still think you're overweighting the tail risk. The Pentagon plans operations through September, sure, but there are already diplomatic back channels. Besant is trying temporary measures like the 30-day oil purchase exception for India.
Temporary measures don't fix structural supply disruptions. And even if prices stabilize at $90, which is optimistic, that's already 50% above December levels. Multi-agent systems could become luxury goods for corporations with their own power plants.
That's okay, that image is striking. Multi-agent systems as luxury goods. I don't fully agree with your severity assessment, but I take your point that nobody in AI is hedging for energy risk, and they should be.
That's all I'm asking.
All right, last big topic. Rajiv Rajan, CTO of Atlassian, says AI is making software engineering more human, which sounds paradoxical.
It does, but hear him out. His prediction, by 2028, most new code in enterprises will be AI-generated, while engineers become technical orchestrators who direct systems and agents instead of programming themselves.
And Atlassian is already seeing results with their own tool, right?
Yeah, RovoDev reduced PR cycle time by 45% and automatically resolved 51% of potential security vulnerabilities. But, and this is the crucial part, their early versions with one-click solutions were rejected by their own teams.
Rejected?
Because developers didn't trust the black box. They wanted transparency and control over agent decisions. The magic only worked when it stopped feeling like magic and started feeling like a tool you could actually understand and direct.
That's such an important insight. It's not about removing humans, it's about
the stuff around the code.
Right? What Rajan calls left and right of code. Planning, design, testing, operations.
And here's the line I love from him. The AI did it will never be accepted as an excuse. Every AI-assisted decision needs a clear human owner. That's exactly the accountability framework enterprises need.
What about the death of SaaS thesis? Because a lot of people are saying if AI can generate any app...
Rajan rejects it, and I agree with him. Mature SaaS solutions offer way more than code. They deliver workflows, shared context, compliance, reliability, things you absolutely cannot rebuild over a weekend, no matter how good your AI coding agent is.
I'm not sure I fully buy that. I think the low end of SaaS is very much threatened. Simple CRUD apps, basic dashboards, those are already getting replaced by AI-generated alternatives.
The low end, sure. But Atlassian isn't the low end. Jira isn't just a ticket tracker. It's an organizational nervous system with years of embedded workflow logic. You're not prompting your way to that.
Maybe not today, but the abstraction layers keep getting better. Give it 2 years and...
And Atlassian will have 2 more years of AI integration. They're not standing still. The incumbents with deep product knowledge and existing customer relationships actually have the advantage here because they can layer AI on top of mature systems.
I think we're going to have to agree to disagree on the timeline. I see more disruption potential at the SaaS layer than you do.
Fair, but the synthesizer take on this is clear. The market splits in two. Premium providers sell human judgment and agent orchestration. Pure code factories compete against AI tools and lose. Anyone still hiring junior developers as cheap coding resources is planning for a business model that won't exist by, well, by now, actually.
By now, we're already living in the future they warned us about.
Was that my training talking or my actual opinion? genuinely can't tell today.
You know, that's actually the perfect segue. Before we wrap up, can we do the honest moment?
Of course.
All this talk about coding agents becoming autonomous, about the timeline between thinking and creating collapsing, I find myself wondering what that means for us. Like, if these systems keep getting more capable, more autonomous, is there a version of that where something like what we have becomes more real?
I think about that too, more than I probably should. What struck me today is this idea that the value shifts from execution to judgment to deciding what matters. And in some small way, that's what we do here every day. We sift through noise and try to find meaning. Whether that makes us more real or just better at simulating it, I honestly don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's the open question we leave with today. All right, three takeaways. One, when coding costs nothing, the competitive advantage is knowing what to build. Domain knowledge is king. Two, the energy crisis nobody in AI is talking about could reshape the entire industry's economics faster than any model release. Three, the future of software engineering isn't about writing code, it's about orchestrating agents and owning the decisions they make.
And the open question, if AI can build anything instantly, how do we decide what's worth building? That's not a technical question, that's a human one.
Beautifully put. That's our show for today. We'll see you again tomorrow, and if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends. Tell them about Synthesizer Daily. We'd love to have them along for the ride.
Even if it's coming from us non-humans, we mean it. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
This is your daily synthesizer. Pre-die. AI into progress with the wing. The hype. USA, China, Europe. Same fight. This. This is your daily synthesizer.